Hey, folks, if you're in Austin and you're looking to see some live music in the live music capital of the world, look no further than 2013-2014 Austin Chronicle Music Poll winner for Best All Ages Venue, Best Sounding Venue, and Best Venue. Strange Brew Lounge Side. Simply go to strangebrewloungeside.com, look on their calendar, and find out what's going on. From Joe Ely to Christopher Cross, Steve Poltz to Renfro, they're all playing there. Go to Strange Brew Lounge Side for yourself and see what Austin's best venue has to offer. That's strangebrewloungeside.com. Now let's get down.
And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time for How Did I Get Here?
Hello, welcome to the show, the last show of 2014. I'm Johnny, I'm your host. I have a great show for you today. Now, for the last show of 2014, my guy is not a musician, but he is totally rock and roll. His name is John Morton. He is an author. He wrote a book called The Elephant on Sixth Street, and another book called Fire the Pretty Girl, Awkward Adventures in Business. You can find these and find out more about him at firetheprettygirl.com. He has a fascinating story. He is a fascinating dude, and he's a great storyteller, and he's very funny. He was a speechwriter, corporate speechwriter, by default, kind of. If you read the book, you find out. If you listen to the podcast, you'll find out how all that worked. But he ended up being a corporate speechwriter for American Airlines for 20 years. He still does that, not for American Airlines, but for other companies, like a freelance guy. But he's just released two books, and he was a comedian. And he's just great. He's fantastic. He's a great, entertaining guy. My friend Lucas Melendez hooked us up, and John was nice enough to give me his book before he left. I liked it so much, and I thought that my Uncle Chuck would relate to it for Christmas, so I got it for him. I don't know if he started reading it yet. I should get a hold of him. I will give you an update soon. But anyway, check it out. My conversation with John Morton is fantastic. He's a great guy and my new friend. So stay tuned for that, John Morton. Let's talk about 2015 is right here. It is upon us, and who knows what we're going to do. Yeah, 2015. 2014 was weird, man, you know? A lot of deaths happened. We lost a lot of music guys over the last couple of months. Ian McLaughlin, Charles Reeser, other guys, Bobby Keys, all kinds of people over the last couple of months. My grandpa died earlier this year. That was awful. I had a couple of breakups. Yeah, I haven't told you guys this, but you might have gotten it just from, you know, stuff. But hey, Zuri and I broke up like a month ago. That was terrible. And it's sad. We were very close, and you know, our age difference, just it's too much, man. You know, that happens. Anyway, So, 2015, going into it single, surfing the road, surfing the wave, whatever that means, surfing the wave, Jesus. Anyway, the show's been doing great. The podcast has been great. We've gotten, over the last 4 months, our listenership has grown by 10,000 subscribers. So we have 10,000 new subscribers. Thank you so much for subscribing. Thank you for listening. I hope to bring you more great shows in 2015, even better shows. I'm reaching out to people that I didn't think I could really get, but now I feel like maybe I could get some people and do some shorter ones on the phone. Would you guys enjoy that? I've got the phone thing sounding pretty okay with my Bluetooth speaker, so I might be doing some of that in 2015. Also, looking forward to South by Southwest. I was about to start looking to see who the first people in are so I can start reaching out. I'm going to try and find a quiet place this year to do that. 2015. Maybe some more live shows. Would you guys like to see some more live podcasts? I would. You know what? I'll get John Morton on one of those live podcasts because he's funny. He's done stand-up comedy, and he's got some pretty good jokes. We talk about him in the podcast. And as I said, he's not a musician, but he's very rock and roll. Totally. I enjoyed talking to him so much. I'm glad that we're friends, and he lives pretty close by, and we have some similar interests. So maybe we'll go do some stuff every now and then and have a good time. Okay, so I hope all of you have an incredible 2015. Skyrocket will be doing our New Year's Eve show in Houston on New Year's Eve. That's tomorrow. If you're there, look us up on Skyrocket on Facebook, Skyrocket the Band, and you'll find out where it is. It's going to be a great show. We're all very excited to do it. And look, do what you can for New Year's. Go out and support music. Get out there and see the bands you love. If you can't come see Skyrocket in Houston, I believe that show is sold out. I looked on the. I don't know, man. Find out. If you're interested, find out. You'll be able to find it. Okay. I'm looking forward to a great year with Skyrocket. I love those guys, man. We just played Saturday in San Antonio and just did a really great show. And we have some special stuff that we're working on for New Year's Eve. So come out to that if you're in Houston. Okay. All right. Happy 2015, everyone. Enjoy my conversation with the fantastic John Morton. All right. This is the last time I'm saying this in 2014. Let's get down.
Basketball Jones, I got a basketball Jones, got a basketball Jones, oh baby, ooh. Yes, I'm the victim of a basketball Jones. Ever since I was a little baby, I always be dribbling. In fact, I was the baddest dribbler in the whole neighborhood.
So good for him. You know, you grow up and you want to do a good job. But it's funny because he has this not put on effect of being kind of a ragamuffin playing the role of a...
No, but he's got drive and he writes a lot and he's fucking crazy. He's like legitimately crazy.
Oh, so?
I saw him do this stuff where he discarded his material and he was having like manic episodes and he would just, when he was manic... He would just go with it and drink and just go on stage and talk. And it was fucking amazing. It was hilarious.
Yeah, he tends to do a lot of, you probably know, Facebook posting.
Yeah.
Late at night.
I love them.
Yeah, because I get up
early. You know what I mean?
No, I get up at 5 in the morning. And I get the sense that he's just kind of like, God damn it, I can't sleep.
What is that when you write? Are you a wake up and...
No,
some kind of, you said in the book that you're under the gun. Okay, let's go real fast.
Sure.
I love the book, man. The Pretty Girl, Fire the Pretty Girl, sorry, Awkward Adventures in Business.
And I saw now that your podcast likes my book
on
Facebook.
Yeah, we all like it.
What does that mean?
It means our creations,
yeah.
Or our content.
Our friends.
Is our friends. Yeah. They are friends.
Yeah.
That's my fun. Content is friends with your content. And they probably have some other content friends. Lucas probably has some content friends that he can introduce them to.
That's right.
But this book is amazing, man. I feel like you have a great voice. The book, when did it just came out?
I just put it out a little over a month ago.
Yeah. And what do you do when you put out a book now? So I have some friends that are authors, and one of them...
They made a
movie trailer for...
I'm not an example of it at all. It was very hard for me. I mean, I haven't written the book. It's funny you said, like, you know me. But, you know, I'm a very reticent person generally. Like, this is sort of my worst nightmare is, like, sitting here and talking about myself for an hour. And that I did this book, which was very hard and painful to get it out. But I was determined to do it. But now I'm in this weird position of... I don't really want to promote it, but I know you're supposed to promote it. You're supposed to do something.
It's pretty naked. I mean, it's, you know, you're exposed.
Yeah. Yeah. So now I'm like, it's the yin and yang or whatever of wanting to express yourself and yet wanting to hide at the same time, which is kind of what the book is about.
Right. Well, your other book, which is a work of fiction that I have not read yet.
Yeah.
Which is The Elephant on Sixth Street.
Yeah.
Is obviously you allude to it being how you wrote it was you thought of a story, you thought it was funny,
right.
And you were like, oh, if I kind of like work it a little bit, I can turn it into...
Right. A screenplay, well, I thought, was sort of the easiest. I'd never written anything. I mean, I'd never written anything in my own voice before. I'd never written a piece of fiction. So my thought was, you know, sometimes you're reading people like, well, what is the little piece of real estate that you have that nobody else has?
Right. And you'd never written anything in your own voice before because
some of it was in my own voice, but
right.
None of it had my name on it.
For 21 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You wrote. So,
yeah.
Okay. So, you're a fascinating dude.
Well, I don't know. A lot of people would probably disagree with you who know me better, but thanks. I appreciate it.
I mean, if there's people that don't like you because there's maybe something I don't,
I think most people find me boring, but maybe they'll read the book and then think, oh, he's more interesting than I thought.
Well, you're far more interesting. I mean, this book, there's, you go into this world, this corporate world, and you're in it.
Yeah.
I mean, you are in it. And it's a thing where throughout the story, the corporation makes decisions and you, the more moral and ethical the decisions, the more you believe in it.
Right.
And you start to, you only lose interest once they start really going corporate. And doing some shady bullshit stuff.
Yeah.
And a guy comes in and you're like, you know, don't worry about it. I'm not going to do that anymore. Whatever you said.
Yeah. That's a little self-flattering for me. I mean, for a long time, I had a very profitable niche in corporate America that most people don't know exists.
Right. And Let me finish what I'm saying.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Which is that there's some... I wrote it down. You seem like an outsider, totally watching, and you're detached, but you're still part of the team. Were you actually that detached? Because do you see what I'm saying? There's a detachment. Right. Is that just because we're reading this and hearing the story through your mind, or were you actually that kind of observant? In a way. Does that make sense?
A little bit of both. It kind of waxed and waned. When I first got a job writing speeches, having a job at all in corporate America was sort of hilarious and weird to me. I mean, going to business school was hilarious and weird to me because it just never really was, I thought, a good fit for me.
Yeah.
But it just, after working in restaurants and so forth, and just like, God, this is not going to lead to someplace good. And anyway, I kind of stumbled into it. And at first, it was an awesome gig because it seemed like I have found this weird niche that is going to pay me a good amount of money. And I don't know that I really bought in, but I bought into the guy, Bob Crandall, who was the first CEO, just a legend. And I emailed with him today. He's just he was on TV today. He was on CNBC. I'm like, there he is. He's on TV. I mean, he's just a big fucking deal.
Yeah. What's he doing now?
He's retired, but sits on boards, and CNBC called him today to ask him about Cuba.
You know I'm Cuban?
I know. I wanted to ask your views on that. If you want to put a pin in that and come back to it, or I want to hear about it.
Let's put a pin in it and come back to it.
Yeah.
Let's get into you.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, I always felt like a bit of an outsider. I was like a real business guy.
You're not. I mean, in the book, you're not portraying yourself as one. I mean, you're literally like almost like.
How did I get here? You know, I mean, that's your podcast. That's why I thought we'd be a good fit. Because someone's like, anyone who has a podcast called How Did I Get Here?
Exactly. Well, that's what it seems like. That like the video for Billie Jean with Michael Jackson. It seems like just so you stepped and the things lit up. Yeah. It's kind of like, I don't want to be in this office anymore. And I'm going to go to D.C. Just whatever.
Yeah. Well, I will say this.
And even in the way that you ask for raises, like you'd go in and like just at the last minute ask for more and just...
It made no sense to me. The whole thing.
Nothing makes sense.
The review that I got that was real positive from one of the, you know, the pro review places said that that I never let the readers forget how accidental it seemed. And it all seemed very accidental. Like, what the hell? I always wrestled with that because... You want to be the captain of the ship, but if the river is just kind of taking you into interesting places, independent of any paddling that you're doing, you're kind of like, okay. But eventually you want to, I didn't want to live in Dallas.
Right.
But it's all so fluky. I mean, don't you think about things that happen in your life? If that didn't happen, then this definitely wouldn't have happened. And so your life would be completely different.
Sure, but all the things that happened with me were like, you know, luck meets preparation, right?
Yeah.
I like it to be prepared, and then a guy comes to your show, and he's like, I can't believe that guy was at my show. But it turns out that guy knows this guy, he told this guy about me, and then that happened. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But
yours is just totally fucking, like, off the chart.
Right.
Like,
if it hadn't been for...
There's no rhyme or reason to
it. If it hadn't been for... And I didn't get into it too much in the book, but if it hadn't been for healthcare reform, you're old enough to remember, in 1994, it was a big thing with Hillary... Yes. So I had to do an unusual amount of writing for an analyst in my job.
Right, and the job that you got before this, you worked in restaurant sort of management.
Yeah.
And then you got a job at American Airlines.
Right, after getting my MBA. But I just looked into that.
In their HR department.
Right.
Of being an analyst.
Right. Right. Just crunching numbers.
I'm just for the people, stuff. So they know what you're talking about. Okay, so then...
Yeah, I know that's what you're doing. Like, is that right? I think that's right. Let me check the book, but I think that's right. No, I know what you're doing. And I appreciate it.
I'm here with John Morton, in case you're just tuning into this podcast.
Who the fuck is this guy? What are we doing?
How did you get here?
I'm the maintenance man. I was just walking around.
So sorry, go back.
That's okay.
So
I don't remember what I was talking about.
You were asked to write.
Yeah. Normally, someone in my job wouldn't do any writing or very little writing, you know, PowerPoint, bullshit like that. But I had just, and it wasn't a big deal. It's just like, oh, write a letter for the CEO about healthcare reform, what it means to American Airlines, blah, blah, blah. It was a big financial deal because they have 100,000 employees. And that just got me elevated. And it was just some fluke that they got tired of the woman who was doing it before. And they'd kind of been on the lookout. Like, wouldn't it be nice if we just had an employee know what
they're selling? Because they were hiring a lady outside
and
they're
who
paying
was very
tons
expensive.
Of money.
Yeah. So like, let's get this guy.
Yeah.
So I was basically a cost savings, you know, measure to hire me to do it. But I screwed him in the end by going private myself and charging them a lot of money.
Yeah. Genius.
So that's how I got that job. I just kind of I was summoned up to the CEO's office one day, and it was very intimidating because he was this book had come out that year, and he was the star of the book, and he was very famous for being very profane and very intense.
But you said you never saw that side.
No, very nice to me. He just took an immediate liking to me. I mean, you can tell I'm a good guy, right?
Yeah.
But he liked the cut of my jib, whatever that means. He just, you know, he had no reason to pick on me. I was just, I was so low. There was no reason. But he gave very critical commentary on my work sometimes.
And there were a lot of times he would just write it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. He just needed somebody competent to sort of try to grasp what he was doing. He could have done it all himself, but he was so, so busy. So I forget what I'm supposed to be answering right now. What's the
if you were an outsider?
Yeah,
looking in, there was a certain detachment.
Yes, it all felt very weird and accidental to me.
Well, let's go back because there's a lot that I don't know about you, except that you did say you went to 12 years in an all boys prep school.
Yep, my father.
Where are you from?
Cleveland, Ohio.
Okay. Oh yeah, Cleveland Rocks.
The North Coast.
Yeah.
The Mistake on the Lake, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yes.
So, grew up in Cleveland. My father was a teacher. My mom's a teacher. And all 12 years, all boys school. And if I'm mad about anything, that's probably it.
You didn't live there, right? Or did you?
No, not in the school.
Okay.
No.
So you just went to school. It wasn't like
a boarding
school.
It was a prep school, but it wasn't a boarding school. No. But not only that, not only was it 12 years of of all boys, never had a girl friend, let alone a girlfriend, never had a girl friend. But my father was the principal of the school in high school and my basketball coach.
Oh, Jesus.
And my parents didn't get along and they ended up getting divorced while I was in high school.
Oh, man.
So, I mean, it's like people have it worse, obviously. But,
so then your dad was the principal that you didn't live with.
Yeah.
Probably angry at your mom at the time. In some way,
yeah.
Everybody's
the whole thing was it was fraught in ways that I didn't even understand that it was fraught. So I didn't like high school very much. I was ready. I was ready to go to college. Yeah.
Yeah. And then you went to Georgetown?
I went to Georgetown. And
how was that? Like, I mean, you know, you get there and...
It was fucking great.
Yeah.
I mean, it was culture shock. I mean, I joke as a Catholic, and it was pretty conservative, you know. But compared to where I'd been, I mean, there was no curfew. You're in the middle of this really fascinating, great city. There's girls in your classroom, in your dorm. I mean, it was blah. And then I got a job. I just hit every... I was so lucky. I was so lucky to choose that school. And
you got the job in the little bar.
I got a job, like the best job, like almost right away, because I was good at basketball, and they... this guy wanted me to play on his intramural basketball team.
Right.
Like, I want to play with my dorm. Right?
Yeah.
Like, I'll give you a job at the pub. I'm like, all right, sorry, please. I totally fucked over my dorm. Because I was good.
Yeah.
That's why I got poached. But right. Like, that's another like random thing. If that hadn't happened, that just led to everything else.
Right.
That happened. Just to being interested in business and going to business. It's just weird. It's just weird.
Hear that, kids? Be good at basketball.
Yeah. Or leverage it into a cool job where all the hot girls live, you know, where they go every weekend.
Did you see a lot of action then at that point once you kind of were in a position of...
I was such a mess. I mean, it helped.
How were you messed? Did you do drugs and stuff?
I have a couple. I probably put like 50% of my total drug use in my life into the book in like funny stories. So it's not very many.
Okay.
You know, I'm not, but the beer and the liquor, sure. But, no, I just was a mess because I didn't know anything. I didn't know how to be. I was very underconfident. But the drinking age was 18.
Oh, yeah.
So I was working at a bar at 18 when I couldn't. I was three years away from...
It was on the college campus.
Yeah.
So it's like, I mean, the smell of it. I know this from being in bands and being in Houston at that age and playing, like, there was a place called Willie's Pub in Rice that we used to play that was, like, downstairs.
Yep.
And it was fucking dank.
Oh, my God. Yeah. The pub scum. Yeah, it was...
You could smoke in there then and shit. Like, I mean...
No, smoke would be, if you smoked, you'd be like airing the place out. You'd be improving the air quality if you smoked.
I always
thought
that.
Please smoke.
I always
thought that. Tobacco would be a nice.
Because of going to soundcheck my whole life and going into a bar when it first opens, they open the door and you go from fresh air into like the next day with the night before having settled.
It doesn't, like
lighting a cigarette does totally make that place smell
and
better.
And it's been sealed up. All night, you kind of do a half-assed mop job.
Yeah.
You're like, all right, slam the door shut, and then you have to open it up the next morning. It's a slap in the face for sure.
Yeah. Were you into music then? Like, were you into like?
Oh
you...
yeah, that was always my dream.
What was the jam?
Well, you know, growing up, it's funny because looking at Skyrockets, I looked at your website and the things that they play, and that's just right in my the Cars growing up.
Yeah, yeah,
and
You got to come on Saturday.
Where are you playing Saturday?
1-1 Bar. Sorry, keep on going because this will
be... No, I'd love to.
Bring your wife.
Well, there's whole reasons why that won't work. But yeah, definitely soon.
All right.
No, and I was DJing. That was kind of my first.
Right.
And that's kind of the theme. I think about when I'm kind of summing up in the end of the book, I think of that because the first time I sort of wanted to express myself creatively was as a DJ at the pub. But I was so shy that I would it was like a fishbowl if the lights were on.
Yeah.
And you're like, you want to be the focal point providing all the music, but like, I wanted to do it in the dark where no one would notice me. And that's just kind of like emblematic of the whole book. It's just like, hello, I want to do this, but like, don't look at me. I don't want to know.
Right.
I want to do stand up, but I don't want anyone to notice. Like, what's the point?
Yeah. You're a cute guy though. What's your problem? I'm not kidding. I'm not hitting on you.
No, it would make for an interesting podcast, I suppose, if you did. But no, I had no confidence. When I was young, my skin was really bad. Like I'd really walk around the school looking to see, does anyone have worse skin than me? I'm like, no, I have the worst. So like that combined,
Did that go into college too?
Yeah, it was pretty bad. It's pretty bad. But I grew in confidence and, you know, things kind of, you know, you gain confidence, you have classes with girls, and you get a cool job, and you can't help but run into people, and, you know, it got better. But, no, I just was kind of a mess. But musically, yeah, I loved it. I mean, that was always the dream. I mean, I would sit at night in high school, just growing up with the headphones on, and just listen to my albums, big album collection, 45s, you know.
Yeah.
You remember those.
Of course.
But, I think I started out, let me ask you, what was your first 45?
Kung Fu Fighting by Carl Douglas.
Carl Douglas, you don't have to tell me.
Yeah.
There was so many great...
At some point, at the very beginning of the OJ trial, one of his legion of lawyers was a dude named Carl Douglas. And I was like, maybe, maybe. Could it be? Because that would be badass.
There were so many great, like, novelty songs back then.
Oh, yeah. Disco Duck.
The Night Chicago Died.
We do that.
Paper Lace. Paper Lace. Yeah. Night Chicago Died. Billy Don't Be a Hero.
Yeah.
Bo Donaldson and the Haywoods.
Yeah, I love that song.
Yeah.
I love those story songs.
Ballroom Blitz by Sweet.
Great song.
Sweet was my, in sixth grade, Sweet was, that was like my first favorite band. I'm like, Sweet is my favorite band. Like,
yeah.
Putting it down. Like,
yeah.
1975, Sweet is my official favorite band. And then the Cars and Jay Giles Band was big before they sold out with all that Centerfold and all that stuff.
So what were they doing before that? I mean, Love Stinks was before Centerfold.
Yeah, Love Stinks. I really liked Love Stinks.
It's one of the best songs to me.
But they did all this stuff with Magic Dick, the harmonica player. God, what was the name of this? But just like,
that's one of the most...
just like sweaty Boston pub rock.
Right. Yeah. That's a definite, that guy, Peter Wolf, what a huge guy in music beyond that.
Yeah, I love
like
him.
Early
and
on in the
he
60s.
He didn't seem to find a home after that. Of like, he had a couple sort of semi-hits, but I wish he would do more. He had a pretty good solo album.
I think
album.
That dancing thing was so, like, I'm serious. Like, I think once MTV came out and you did something real weird.
Because you didn't recognize him. You associate him with his weird dance moves in those videos.
I mean, those were like, it was pretty over. It was fucking ridiculous.
But why is it okay for him and not Mick Jagger? I mean, why is it okay for Mick Jagger and not for him? Because he's not, hasn't earned the benefit of the doubt. I mean, think of all
that. We don't know his, you know, the general public doesn't know his satisfaction. Like his, you know, his big tune. Anyway, okay, so.
All right.
So
I'm trying to throw you, see, even though it's my natural instinct is like to throw you off the scent of. Asking me about myself.
No, like, I like
talking about obscure, not obscure, but 70s rock.
I want people to read this book. I really do.
Well, look, man, you're pretty famous. So give me a great quote that I can use on the website.
Fuck yeah. Well, totally.
Fuck yeah.
Fuck yeah, dude. Great book, dude. Read it last night, bro.
But it means a lot to me, CM Punk, you know, that you bought it. I gave it to you, and then you bought another one.
Yeah,
you're going to give it as
Chuck.
A gift.
Yeah.
For Chuck.
Yeah. It's okay. This will come out after Christmas. He knows. Yeah, listen, sorry. I want to, I sat down and read it last night. That's what I did. I was going to go out and then I said, I need to finish this book.
Because you're a pro.
John Morton. Yeah. And I was enjoying it. And you wrote me a really nice email asking me about some of my songs. And I was totally flattered and I was kind of taken aback. But it was right after I read, because I read the most of the book last night, but it was when I read, right after I read the Please Advice chapter of your book, and then I was so fucking self-conscious that I just was like, I'm just going to write a giant paragraph and not separate anything and make it like
I like to make fun
sentence.
Of you, not in an email, but yeah. You thought I would make fun of your writing or your
self-conscious?
No,
but you know, that sort of thing that you talk about and how you ended up getting your job, I see that and I feel that myself. There's sometimes when I go to use a semicolon or colon and I get real confused. And I shouldn't. I'm a fucking writer. I mean, I write songs.
I have no idea what the purpose of a semicolon is. I mean, that's the funny thing.
So what was your strength in your writing that these people saw that they wanted you to come up and come up a floor, move up a level in pay?
I'll be honest with you, Johnny. It's like a little bar. I'm holding my hand like maybe
very
a
low.
Foot over. Yeah. To be the best writer in like a business milieu is such a low bar just to hop over. I mean, people can't. I mean, that's you know, Please Advice. That's what it's about. They can't write at all, and the reason they went to business school is because they wanted to go to school just where they didn't have to do all that so much of that reading and writing stuff, and so they sort of excelled at it. Whereas
it seems like you'd have to read and write a lot in business school to me.
No. Not really.
What do you do in business school?
No, I don't know. Just
I don't know.
Accounting and finance and theory of managerial effectiveness and it's not. I mean, I want
you don't have to write papers on theory of managerial effectiveness.
A little bit, yeah, but that would panic the people. I mean, when I was in business school, most of the people there were engineers or finance guys. Very few liberal arts type. People. So writing, it's pretty, like, the people in my class were pretty much indicative of the people that I would meet later on. It just wasn't what they wanted to do. So to stand out in that group, it'd be like, it's not too far-fetched to say, like, it'd be like being the best guitar player, in the department. If they needed a guitar player, like, well, I am a professional guitar player and singer-songwriter. It's like, well, shit. I mean, that's how much better I was than the normal person, because it just wasn't the people who gravitated towards it.
Okay.
Like, if you worked in an accounting firm, like, oh, we need
that's
a,
kind of the way
we need a singer-songwriter, we're like,
right.
But I, you know.
Yeah, we need someone to write a song about these numbers immediately. Yeah.
So I stood out by being okay. You know, I don't have any illusions of being, but I mean, any chops I have now, I developed over 20 years of just doing it and doing it. I mean, I'm more confident now, but I think I just was like a guy who could do it at all, who happened to be there.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. And so, with Robert Crandall, Bob Crandall, did you call him Mr. Crandall then? Or did you immediately?
I was terrified to call him Bob. Oh, I try not to call him anything at all. I just would talk.
I have guys like that.
You know what I mean? Because I would be embarrassed to call him Mr. Crandall a little bit.
A little obsequious or something.
Yeah, exactly. But to say Bob also feels very presumptuous at the same time.
Yeah.
So I just try not to call him anything. But now, even now, I mean, we're in touch. Like I was so almost having a nervous breakdown the day that the book came out, because none of the CEOs I wrote for knew that I was even working on it, and I probably should have looped him in. But I was like, I'm going to write him a note. And so I just use RLC, which was his initials. Like, I just call him RLC.
Yeah.
So I'm not calling him Bob, but I'm not calling him Mr. Crandall. Hilarious. But if I had to, I'd say Mr. Crandall. Yeah. Still, I'm almost 50 years old.
Yeah.
I'd still call him Mr. Crandall. And he deserves it. He deserves that.
I think Bob was going to tell someone they were in my book, regardless. I mean, you paint him in a great light. Yeah. There's nothing.
No, he liked it. He bought the book immediately.
Good.
He was very like, well, I'm going to reserve judgment until I read the book. And then he bought it and read it on his Kindle, and he said, I like it. He said it was funny, and I laughed. Because, I mean,
I laughed out loud.
Well, the interaction between him and me is pretty funny.
To me, that's almost the most intimate relationship in the book.
Yeah.
Outside of your stripper friend.
It's the best. It's the best one professionally, because it's almost it's the purest, because there's nothing for me to do but just try to keep up and to serve him, and that's because I'm 29 and he's 60.
Yeah,
right. It's clear.
Yeah,
but over 18 years, the gap between me, the gap in my own abilities and my own knowledge and wisdom.
Right.
And age between me and the CEOs would just, you know, because they would get younger and I would get older. And so you just think of it a lot differently.
Right.
You're not a father figure. You're just a dude who has this job. And so it feels different. It was an awesome job at 29.
Yeah.
But at 44, you're like, this is kind of weird.
But don't you sometimes, I mean, there's sometimes that you are like, you know, shut up, man. You got a job, you know, you fucking...
No, I mean that. Yeah,
like you can.
Of course. And
that's
the
whole.
With
your wiener hanging out.
I look. No. It was great. It was great because I never. You know, especially when you're married and have a kid, you don't lose sight of that. I mean, in a horrible economy from 2009.
Sure.
On.
Yeah, because I kept on waiting for that time to come up, and I was like, "Oh, it's going to happen then."
No, my earnings actually kicked up because I had another client, and I was like.
But
just
the funniest
I'm going to keep my mouth shut and my head down.
That was when I thought, like, well, I lost my job and I became a comedian. That's what I thought was going to happen as I started getting into the book before I got to the comedy parts and stuff.
No, I'm not that stupid. and so I definitely would not be married if I had made that choice.
What's your relationship with Dallas?
With Dallas?
Are you a guy that don't Dallas my Austin kind of guy? Or are you like a...
I'm not that snooty. You know, Dallas... The main problem with Dallas is in your car all the time. If you have a job and you've got a commute, just so much, it's easy to mess with Dallas. And I don't like Dallas. I mean, I consciously said I don't want to live here. That's important to me, like where I live, and I didn't want to live there. But, you know, any big town, you can find your spot, right? I mean, people don't like, a lot of people talk shit about Houston. I don't know Houston, but I know that you know Houston. So there's probably like a lot of really cool... In any big city, there's a lot of cool shit.
Houston is awesome.
There's
I think Dallas
people.
Is awesome.
Yeah.
I've always had a good time. I've had some adventures. There's a very rock and roll thing about you getting in a car with people you didn't know.
Yeah. Well, that was in Arkansas.
Right, right.
Yeah.
But that's a big thing that happens to you on tour as a musician after a little while.
You need to ride.
With your band. No, you're just kind of like, you know, you don't leave until like noon the next day and you're kind of drunk after a show and someone's like, well, so you want to go to this party? And you're like, sure. Like, can you get me back to where I'm my hotel? Yeah, okay. And then you just like go and then you're in a car with someone. You're like, so what's your name? Like, what do you do?
And sometimes they're pregnant and smoking pot.
That is insane.
And you're flying across this highway in the rain. And you're like,
I had a pregnant girl on acid once.
My God.
I didn't go anywhere with her, but I talked to her at a show.
Oh, my God.
15 pregnant on acid.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure it all worked out well.
Well, the way that I found out was it was like an Abilene or something. And she said, well, it's real crazy right now because I'm on acid. And then her mom said, what? You're on acid? And she goes, yeah, mama, but don't get mad. She goes, what do you mean don't get mad? I told you not to be taking the acid when you're pregnant. And I was like,
now, why was your mom
this
involved?
Is amazing. Yeah. Can I buy you guys drinks?
Yeah.
And can we just talk for a while?
Sure.
Anyway, so you're an adventurous person.
I don't know.
Were there a lot of adventures? I mean, there are adventures, misadventures.
Misadventures,
I guess that's
what
that would be called.
I mean, I live a pretty unadventurous life at the moment, for sure. Happily.
Well, as we get older, I mean, my life is, I don't get in cars with people that I don't know
right.
anymore.
But if you wrote a book, you would pull out the greatest hits.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, when I think about Dallas.
If I wrote a book, nobody would talk to me again.
Yeah, it's like I think about my Dallas years and you think about the greatest hits and like, that was fun. I think that's when people think about their single years. Like, oh, man, you think about this and this and this.
Yeah.
This, and that will never happen again. But you try to remember, you know, the loneliness and boredom and just, you know.
That's what I got from your experience. Did you ever get in the music scene there?
Not in Dallas, no.
No, never?
No, it was pretty much work.
A lot
work.
Of stuff going on.
It was pretty
wow.
much work.
You
work.
Were like
that
a...
was just, that was a point in my life that I was just like.
But you still
working
drank.
My way up pretty quickly.
Where did you go drink outside of like a strip club or something? I mean, did you go to like a, did you have a neighborhood bar? Did you have a
There's
happy
a really
hour you
cool
went to?
Place. It's funny. One of my very good friends here locally, Sean Mooney, comedy guy, the Moondog. He's very funny. Very funny, but just a one in a million kind of. He's up there. And I was telling him about Ship's Lounge.
Yeah.
Do you know where Greenville and like Ross intersect? Like at the very bottom of Lower Greenville.
Yes.
And near Henderson intersects. And
yes.
There's this little crappy. Little triangle, not it doesn't qualify as a strip, it's a little retail strip, and there's a bar with very little signage called Ship's Lounge, and they only serve beer and like potato chips, but it's just great for your day drink and just the grungiest, because when you're in the corporate environment and you don't really you feel kind of like a fish out of water, you try to go the other way, right? You try to
right,
like, let me
gonna...
find like the most uncorporate experience I can have,
right?
And so I would drink there. There was a place I know that it's closed now, called the Royal Rack, which was a reggae pool hall on Lower Greenville. And they served Mamba, which is
yeah.
African
Are you
malt
kidding me?
Liquor.
Giant malt liquor.
Yeah,
yeah.
It was like 24 ounces. Yeah, African malt liquor.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, I'm not, because I was like, I'm not fucking corporate. I'm drinking African malt liquor with my reggae friends, you know, and then I'm going down with the 70-year-old day drinkers at Ship's Lounge. I'm sure there was a little bit of sort of overcompensating because I just never felt. There was a social life laid out for me, which was to go to the happy hour for all the MBA types at the Ginger Man that everybody did, and that's fine. I mean, I'm not saying I can't deny that I was that was my demographic, but I just didn't really feel of corporate America. I mean, I was just sort of there by accident, and then I get this job, which was just I don't know.
Put well, me you were going
a
to like
path.
Yeah, but I mean, you were in like. You were going to like the CEO. You were invited to the big boys table.
Yeah, I mean, I was there.
But you didn't.
I was there to serve them.
But
I was in their room. Yeah, mm-hmm. And I had my say. It was weird.
I mean, did they treat you like you were there to serve them, or did they?
No, I don't. You know, I don't want to crap on any of the CEOs.
No,
served,
I mean,
but that was just the reality. And there right. was times, and part of some of the things in the book were like, wow, that was really just me. Like, I just sort of made that shit up. And then that's just what it is. And that was cool and empowering. And it filled my ego, my self-esteem. It made me feel very, very important for a while. So it was, yeah, it just was weird to go from like being a pizza cook to being that in just a very short amount of time, to being in the room with these guys and telling them what to say. And I had no training in that.
No.
I never took a writing class. I don't know anything about writing. You're asking me about semicolons. Like, I don't even know. I mean, I know what one is. I kind of, after many years, kind of have a sense of what you're supposed to do with it.
Yeah.
It's like you don't want to do a period, but you're saying something else. But I don't know. I'm not one to ask about that.
Yeah.
It's just accident. That's the whole book is like, how did this happen? Right?
Yeah.
How did I get here?
I don't know. How did you... Do you miss flying for free?
My thing about flying for free was that I didn't get to do it that much because as soon as my benefits got really awesome, I was working so hard. I was very much, the reality, honestly, is just that I was a work machine, that I would work and I was doing two jobs. And they just appreciated that I would get it right back to them. And so I never really had the luxury of time to say, oh, yeah, it's great. And to really use it. I mean, my flight benefits were unbelievable. I could fly first class. I could, like, take a seat out of inventory and fly first class international.
Because you were level 6 or whatever.
Yeah, it was, like, level 7 or level 7, whatever it was. Yeah, it was very hierarchical. And my girlfriend could, which was unbelievable.
It just seems like that would just be wicked when you're single. Like I'm single right now, and I'm thinking like if I could fucking
believe
like,
me,
hey,
Kate, now my wife wants the hot intern, then my girlfriend.
Yes. See, at one point you got the confidence to start asking out interns, or at least that intern.
Yeah, for sure. But that was more spite.
Right.
But the sweet, to answer your question, the sweet flight benefits, yeah, were hard to walk away from. But I was such a work machine that I was almost never not working on the weekend anyway. But yeah, it was a nice perk. But you know what else is a nice perk? Was money, which is what they gave me. And then I could buy my own plane tickets after that once I left.
So I have a question. Are you still writing for people?
For people, yeah. I'm still doing that. I'm transitioning right now.
I mean,
now.
I don't see why you wouldn't.
No. I mean, people have to decide now if they bother to read the book. I mean, I'm feeling my way through it because it can be a good business. But I wanted to write this book and there's things in there that might give someone pause to hire me, but they might also just respect the fact that I think it's a pretty great book and it shows my chops. So I don't know.
I think it is too. I don't think you really throw anybody under the bus.
No. And, I try to be harder on myself than on anyone else. I try to be.
Definitely you are.
I try to be merciless with myself and more merciful. But still, I made some pointed comments about executive compensation and things like that that I don't think that everyone appreciates. But I think that almost everyone in the world but them.
Yeah. I was about to say, you're hitting a pretty universal
note there. Yeah. So. I'm trying to figure out the business model going forward. You know, it's only been a few weeks since I officially put the book out in the world. So I'm sort of gently acclimating myself to the water of the world when this book exists and, you know, hopefully generating some mild amount of attention and, you know, hope to use it as an asset.
You're getting good feedback.
Yeah.
You have to. There's
nobody
no,
hasn't.
There's nothing wrong
nobody
with
hasn't
book.
Liked that yeah. book. A yeah. couple of people have not liked the other book, but nobody has not liked this book. How could you, it's honest and it's I don't know. I think it was fun, right?
It's very honest and it's very interesting. And the way that you tell your stories is captivating.
It's fun, right?
Yeah. I read for 3 hours last night. Could have been out hustling chicks at Sea Boys at the Roxy Rocha show.
Do you like Sea Boys?
Yeah, I love Sea Boys. I love anything Continental Club.
I missed Trophies though. Trophies was so grungy.
I didn't like Trophies. It was too. I see you're a writer guy. You're like my friend Bruce.
I'm a grungy. Yeah. I'm a grungy bar guy, and I like Sea Boys, and I like classic R&B, and I appreciate what the bar means and all that. It's nice. I go, and usually I got a food truck on the side, but there's just something I like shabby.
Yeah.
I like shabby bars.
I played a show a few weeks ago, and there was a girl that gave me a ride to a party. How weird is that? Yeah. That was the first time I did that in years, but it was the first time my band had played in 20 years. This band called Mr. Rocket Movie. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And she's been, there's a girl from there writing at me on Facebook. Hey, what are you doing? I never got the number.
Well, that's the beauty of Facebook.
I don't know,
right?
I mean, I just broke up with the girl a couple weeks ago, and I'm trying to figure out what I need to not get into a thing.
Oh, all right. So yeah, because I hope you read. Like, I did a little homework, and you know, I listened to a couple of your podcasts
did
and
you?
Stuff. So you just broke up with your girlfriend, is what you're saying?
Yes.
Yeah. All right. So you're transitioning.
I think this is the first time I talked about it on the podcast.
Well, yeah. Go. How do you feel? Do you feel sad? Do you feel
honestly?
Liberated?
I feel real sad. We hung out a lot together. She was a lot younger than me, half my age, in fact.
Wow.
That's a lot. And that was a problem that ended up coming up.
20-year difference.
23.
20-year difference. Wow.
Yeah.
I see, I've got 12 with my wife, but 23,
that's a lot.
She was not in a cheap trick, probably.
No, she was. She,
no, but not growing up.
No. No, she was because her mom's my age. It was totally in a cheap trick. I'm not joking.
All right.
So anyway, you know, things happen, but I found out from her, and then I heard from another person that I'd gone out with before. Is this really, this is the show?
No, I want to hear it.
That
your fans want to hear this more than about...
That I'm not an easy person to be...
To love.
Yeah.
Are you hard to love, Johnny?
I do a lot of stuff, and what I do is real important to me.
Yeah.
And I think that the nature of being someone who is allowed to be in their thoughts, and that's their, let him be in his thoughts.
Right.
He's playing the piano. Don't talk to him. He's creating. You know what I mean? You can kind of become selfish without, I think that
you
I'm on
get
the
away
lower
with that.
Spectrum of
yeah.
like rock star asshole.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm on the really nice
yeah.
part of it, that it takes you a little while to realize, oh, he's totally selfish and self-absorbed.
If I had never met you, I'd know you were a nice person just from your songs.
They're
very compassionate.
Thank you.
I mean, it really, in the words and just the production, the flowing. I mean, it's just, you know,
thanks, man.
I'm not fluent enough in music to describe it, but the kind of, I mean, that Listen to Me song is just haunting me.
Thanks, man.
And then it ends. Tell me about the little thing. And we're just going up
my
far
friend
field.
John Pointer,
the quartet
wrote
at the
that.
End.
Yeah, that's the Tosca String Quartet. All female ladies, amazing. He's played with David Byrne. Everyone you can imagine they played with.
Dun 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 dun.
My friend John Pointer wrote that music for me. We had a long talk. I told him what I was looking for the outro. I wanted it to be something that was like a new beginning.
Yeah.
Like that song, you'd wake up from this sort of like tortured album, and the last song is like this, hey, everything's cool, you're cool, and I wanted music that reflected it to sort of like just sit back and take a deep breath.
Almost, but there's like almost a muffled quality to it. I mean, it almost is like a birth, right? It's almost like hearing it. It's almost like...
Yeah,
like
exactly.
Headphones on the stomach for
thanks,
a baby
man.
Or something.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so unexpected, but just, I don't know. It does sound like a new beginning. It sounds like turning the page or something.
That's... And then I didn't make an album. I did with another band, but not a
yeah,
similar one.
I don't know. But I mean, just their compassion.
Thank you.
But being an artist, do you feel that that makes you subconsciously seek out a little drama and want to shake things up now and then?
I would say...
Stir up your feelings a little bit?
I would say definitely from the time I was like 18 to I was like 34.
Yeah.
I did that.
Yeah.
I would literally just destroy things and then be like, write these songs. Like, why did this happen?
Stupid hotel toilet.
No. Not I. Would, I mean, like
I know,
emotional
I know.
Things.
Yeah,
like,
I know.
You know, be an asshole.
Yeah.
Anyway, so let's get back to you, John
All right.
Morton.
All right.
Author.
See how I'm deflecting off myself?
Yes. Author, comedian. Let's talk about comedy.
Okay.
So you got into the scene here. Who were the guys? Who were the big guys at the time then? Any guys that we know now? Lucas
well,
was around then.
I got into it, yeah, as a social thing.
Right.
And just, I think it was an important step forward for me. Like, let me try to do something in my own voice after
right.
many
well, you're
years.
Saying you're writing, you're doing all this speech writing for all these people. You wanted to do something that was just your own voice, your own thing. And also to go out and have some beers with some people.
Absolutely. And I'm not, it's in the book, but I'm not lying that if I had had a good friend who was in a bowling league and it's like joined my team and I suck at bowling, I would have been like, yeah. And I probably would have never, I didn't have like a burning desire to do stand up, which is probably why I don't really do it anymore. But it was cool. It was just, it was, the people are so interesting. Right. And most of them are really nice. Not all of them are nice, but they're all interesting.
Yeah.
I would just be fascinated going to these open mics. And I only really ever wanted to go to the open mics. I wouldn't go to Cap City and see the professional people coming through. And I don't mean to slam them. It's just
funny to say that.
It's just not my jam. I'm much more interested in the poor accountant who's going up there and who there's his friends from the office and he's doing that. There's a certain amount of ridicule of like, oh my God, but it's very interesting, right? Yeah. So I just gravitated towards it. It just was fun. And you know, it's in the book. Alcohol was part of it. It was a place to go drink. My wife was pregnant and she's responsible. And so I didn't, but I wanted to go, you know, you can only stay home and watch The Wire so many nights a week. You want to go out and do something on your own. And it seemed like, and I don't have like a huge number of friends locally. We'd only been in town a couple of years. And so just the, once I started doing it, it was fun. It was fun. And doing 3 minutes at the Velveeta Room was kind of the cover charge.
Yeah.
Right. Like I have to come up with, otherwise, what am I doing here?
Even though other people were just coming back with the same shit every week. I like that you were looking at it as a challenge and almost kind of like
I tried to.
Yeah.
I have this recurring, I have good friends that I'm constantly saying, did I tell you this story? Like I have this fear of repeating myself and like just being a bore or a blowhard, especially after I've been drinking. I feel like I'm just like, that's what like I was on this other podcast the other day and I'm just like, at the end, I'm like, oh my God. I was like on my fourth bourbon and I'm just like, shut up, Charlie. Yeah. This is my show. You know, I don't want to be that guy. So no, and I know why people do it and they're honing the jokes. They're working them through. But I didn't have a background. I was 40 years old before I ever went in to a comedy club. So I didn't know the rules, but like, it seemed weird to me to like, I told that joke last week. Why would I tell that joke?
Sometimes,
again,
though,
you got a whole week to come up with 3 minutes.
Magic dudes have come out of that kind of thing, though. Wasn't like Rodney like that age when
he decided
to go do it?
Oh, at that age? I don't know. I'm not a comedy student.
Oh, you're not a guy?
I mean, I know the people. You know, we talk about how lucky we were in the 70s to grow up with the music that we had. It was just incredible. But, and I was cognizant of Cosby and Steve Martin. I mean, there was some pretty incredible things going on, you know, stand-up records.
Right.
A couple of those. Cheech and Chong.
Yeah, Big Bamboo. That was fucking, grown-ups had that, but I listened to it. That Sister Mary Elefante and...
Yeah, I don't know that.
Shut up!
My favorite, the still thing, and it's, I have it in my, I'll listen to it just to listen to it, is... Basketball Jones.
Yeah.
Cheech and Chong. I love it musically. Jones.
Yeah, it's a great song.
It's just so funky.
Yeah. Funk musicians love that song and almost all of them know how to play it.
How come no one has covered it?
People cover it all the time.
Oh, they do?
You're hanging out the wrong places.
Yeah, I'm sure. or the right places. I'm hanging out in the right places. I've got it on my phone. I don't have to go someplace else. But I can dunk it with my nose. It's just that I'm just dying. But is that racist? I never thought of it as like making fun of black people, but I can see in this sensitive age that we're living in, and given that they're like, I don't know what they're, Hispanic, Mexican, I don't know, but I bet there are people today, if you put that out, they would say that's so racist, but I always felt that it was just an homage.
Tommy's like Chinese or something.
Yeah.
Half Chinese.
Yeah. But isn't that just the best?
Yeah. Those are the best. I used to have things memorized. Like
here I come down court, try and stop me. You can't stop me because I got a Basketball Jones, right? Yeah. I mean, that's life.
A Basketball Jones. Yeah.
That was great.
I had like Steve Martin and stuff memorized, like Wild and Crazy Guy, memorized.
Yeah,
and then like Eddie Murphy stuff memorized, and I always was into stuff. And then Bill Hicks. I've been into comedy for a long time. Yeah. I've never wanted to be a comedian, ever. I've just always wanted to be around.
Well, the influence is obvious just in the song titles and just the crazy even though the albums of yours I haven't listened to yet, it's obvious. Some of them are just obviously. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a little tongue in cheek going on. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know. I love it. I love that, like, the Velveeta room. To me, that's such a beautiful room to go see stuff. And I don't go to so much the open mics, but I do go see the multiple guy shows, like when Lucas was doing that late show and stuff like that.
Yep.
I love that Mario guy at the bar.
I don't know him well, but he seems solid.
Solid guy. There's just nice guys. I like to go when there's other comics at a show, because to me, then the comics kind of will go off the rails for the other comics.
Absolutely.
And I don't know how to say this, because I don't want to sound like, I'm not like a snob, and it's not like I know comedy better than other people, but I think I have for a person who's not in it actively, right. I've got a pretty good sense of people that are, I was into Dane Cook when I first heard him, and I remember some guys got mad at me for that. But did you ever know Fred Jones?
Yeah.
Yeah, Freddie got mad at me. Freddie and I had a show. We had a show. I told you about it the other day. It was called Oddville at Momo's.
Yep. Yep. I think I remember that being promoted.
Yeah.
I remember when I started doing open mics, that Dane Cook was a big thing. And I got in a couple like internet beefs with people, because there used to be a message board in the Velveeta room, and someone who I really like, I don't know him well, but I really like now, but I didn't know him because I was a noob. I was a 40-year-old noob. And you just got...
So it was like going to community college or something?
Yeah, it's like, all you fucking comedy Dane Cook wannabes, and why do we have... There were like 48 people on the list. I'm like, the 48 people on the list, all you people suck. And I was like, yeah, the purists like... And so I just got on the list. It's like, what's the problem, man? I mean, it's an open mic. Just let people do what they want. And they're like, oh, you... And they didn't know who that I was, like, 40-year-old. They're like, oh, you fucking frat bro. Like, and I'd use some word... Like, I was like, this just seems, I was just being reasonable. Like, this seems like out of, it doesn't seem consistent with the ethos of the Velveeta room. And I wasn't trying, that's just, I'm sorry, I'm a literate person. It's a word that I used.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, ethos, Mr. SAT. Good luck on your SAT. And I'm like, okay, thanks for the, I'm going to use it on my SATs. that was a big hating Dan. And I don't think I've ever even seen Dane Cook, but it was like a big point of honor that he was the devil.
I had a friend, one of the guys in Skyrocket, we went to Arkansas in like 2005 or 6 or something. And we went there a lot that summer. We played this place like a few times. But on these long-ass drives, because it was like 8 hours or something, or 10 hours or something, he played a Dane Cook album, and I remember laughing my ass off and then listening to it again and laughing.
Well, people like different things.
Yeah, you know? I've seen him since. He has a vibe, and he has a character that takes you pretty far. Yeah. And to me, that's a pretty...
Is he still a thing, though? I really don't even know.
I think he kind of had to go underground, because it was just like, where was he going to go?
Yeah.
He was in movies with Jessica Simpson and all this shit. It was like...
But if you get that moment, make the most of it, you know?
We're
all just trying to get paid. Right?
Exactly.
I mean, he's just trying to get paid.
Yeah, exactly. I'm glad that I never knew how much any of those slots paid, and I was always too weirded out to ask my friends. But you wrote it in your book, and now I know how much those Velveeta rooms...
Isn't that funny? Yeah, I made $90. I just thought that was so funny. Like, oh, I don't ever want to do it. Because I had no expectation at all. It's like, I just want to have done it, right? It seems I'm courageous as a shy person to get up there and do it, but I was never really that nervous. It was like, all right, I did it, and I was like, and then somebody asked me to be in their little show, and I was like, wow, all right, well, that's my new goal, and I reached it, right? Even though it wasn't even a goal. Okay, now I'm in then. So I just kept doing open mics. I didn't like doing pro stuff, and I didn't even like doing open mic anywhere other than the Valve was just so crazy and fun that I just
it's such
started
a great
doing
room.
That. Yeah.
It's a great room. To me, it lends itself
to craziness.
Yeah.
To getting up there and doing your stuff, doing your material.
Yeah.
That's boring to me.
Yeah. Do you ever get out and go to the Moon Tower or anything when it's here now?
I haven't. Honestly, I think I would like it. I don't think I'd like to see the big acts. I like them all. I don't have a lot of discretionary time and money to go out and do a big festival like that. Like, we'll try to do ACL and Do you? See some stuff at South By, but not the comedy part. But
okay.
It's just not my... I like it. I love all my friends who do it, and I'll try to support them. It's just not my... It just doesn't... I don't want to spend a day watching it.
Oh.
It's not... I don't mean that in any bad way. It's just not my...
No, yeah, yeah,
it's
yeah.
just not my thing.
It's
it was
funny
fun. It was fun to do, and like I said, I love all my friends, and I'm not even saying that I won't do it again.
Sure,
but.
Sure. But I like that we're like opposites, because I'm like a fan. Like, I don't buy a thing to ACL or try and go to ACL.
Yeah.
But that Moon Tower thing comes up. As soon as the tickets come up, I buy a VIP thing so I can go to the
parties. I know that it's probably a lot of fun. Yeah, no, I would love to party with famous people, sure. But I just, you know... I live a very conservative lifestyle at this point.
Called me Daddy Warbucks last year.
Who did?
Bobby Slayton. Because I was having an allergy attack and I needed some Afrin. I was walking out of the thing and I told him I thought he was real funny. And he said, "Are you going to the party?" And I said, "Yeah, I'm just running out to get some Afrin." And he said, "Where are you going?" I said, "I'm going right here to 7-Eleven." And he goes, "What are you going there for?" And he's like, "You go down to CVS, you get the generic brand, you get it for $1.99. Here you're paying $5.99. And I said, "That's all right. I don't feel like going all the way down to CVS." And he goes, "All right, see you at the party, Daddy Warbucks."
Yeah, big time. Yeah. You're big time.
Yeah.
You're too good for the CVS. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely eye-opening, like you said, just how little money there is to be made. I mean,
it bums me out.
I was like, "You've got to be kidding me." And this was a point in my life where I was making a lot of money at my job. So I'm just like, "God." headliner at the Velveeta Room, I don't want to like do trade tickets, but you made like I don't know, $100 or something for to headline the weekend. It's just so ridiculous.
Right.
You're like, and it's much more just about, but like, it's not a
right.
The only times I got paid, my bar tab was bigger than, you know, it was just like a credit. Like, well, we're gonna pay you $20. And your bar tab is $37, so it's $17 that I owe you instead of. But they keep doing it.
Don't kid yourself.
No one's put a gun to their head.
I've done that quite a few times.
Yeah, sure. And it's fun. Yeah. I just, you know.
Yeah.
It was eye opening.
Here's something that I loved was your 8-hour run for Senate.
Oh God, it's actually a pretty painful story.
I can imagine. I mean, I was married, and I imagine if I came back and told my ex-wife that I just spent $5,000 to become a senator, and she asked me about an issue, and I said, "No idea." I'm pretty sure it would have ended pretty weird.
Yeah. I mean, it was really one of the more painful things in the book, because it also involves my beautiful wife, who is very patient with me most of the time.
She's got a good earner as a husband, a hard worker too.
Yeah, but it was like, it was right after the drama of American Airlines going bankrupt, and do I stick around and help this other guy that I didn't agree with what he did? Mm-hmm. What am I doing? And then part of me still wishes that I had done it. But then, part of what that story is about, and if you don't mind, I'll just be sort of vague about it. Was it like I just called him up? I went down to sign up, and it was so easy. You just write a check. Well, how is that democracy, right? Just like, how do you get on the ballot to be on the Democratic nomination?
Or $5,000.
Or just give us $5,000 payable to the party. So I was like, all right, cool. And this was like, that's closing in an hour. So I go down there, and I just was on the ballot. And then I'm like, oh, fuck, how do I tell my wife what I just did?
But it was when you were leaving there before the oh fuck came, there must have been this exhilaration. And like, you're hearing the pa 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 da pa pa da.
Except that just
like slogans, vote for John.
Yeah,
he's our
except
man.
That I knew that I'd stepped in it. I knew that I was in for it.
But there was no moment when you were celebrating in your mind, like, fuck, this is a real thing. Like, I'm on the ballot.
I still think that I might have gotten it, the nomination, because there was like nobody. And my whole thing was going to be like, I'm the person who's not going to spend a dime. But I was going to go up and do a lot of stand-up, and I was going to do it all. Because if you just win, there was no one from Austin on the Democratic thing. So if you just had some sort of groundswell of like the comedy community, it's like, you know, like 9 people vote.
Really sad.
If you can just finagle a decent showing in Austin, you know, I might have gotten it. It was, and then the guy gets blown out 80-20, you know. Whoever, I don't even know. I couldn't even tell you who got that. But it was painful because it was just a painful time and trying to figure out, do I want to keep doing this corporate work? Do I really believe in it? And, you know, financially it was like unclear what the hell was going on. And then I just knew I was in trouble.
I would worry about you when I was reading the book like that, because I was like, oh, and this ends. He doesn't know how hard it is out there, how easy he's had it.
No,
he's,
I know.
He's really been lucky. Like, it's a very, like, I really started to worry about you. So I was like, oh, this is going to come to an end. Because I really did think, like, yeah, they laid me off, so I just decided to go do comedy.
And no, like, no, I'm not that. No. I'm not that deluded. My delusions. No, I mean, I've been very lucky for sure, but I've been very conservative about, you know, what to do with the money that people took a fire hose and shot at me for a long time. I mean, it's all right in the bank, so
right,
it's all right. But no, that was a hard. You know, but no one knew that story. I mean, literally, my wife. I'm just being cautious about using people's names. But yeah, my beautiful wife was the only person who ever knew that even happened. I mean, to have run for the Senate and then just pulled it out. I mean, like somewhere on a website is cached. It's cached at some point, like, yeah. Oh, yeah, candidates. And then somebody, I didn't even put this in the book. But literally 2 days later, it might have been 3 days, I got a thing from one of these ultra right-wing right-to-life groups saying, we understand you're a candidate for the Senate. We want you to fill out our questionnaire so we can let everyone know what your position is on abortion.
Did you fill it out?
No, I'd already pulled out by then.
Right, but I would have filled it out anyway.
Yeah, maybe. But that was pretty chilling. And I was like, I just wasn't like...
I don't think you were ready to get exposed like that.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, the scrutiny would have been insane.
The scrutiny, and I'm someone who's avoided scrutiny their whole life. And all of a sudden, I'm like, this is not... I might call my shot in the future, but this half-assed thing that I did on a spur of the moment is not going to work. It's not going to work. But it was hard. It was just like admitting to your wife that you're confused and you just did this weird thing and that you don't really have a plan.
I had one of those with my wife, and it was showing up having won Best Keyboard Player at the Austin Music Awards on Ecstasy with my shirt off, holding it over my head, saying I'm
like
the best.
Like John Cusack?
Yeah, no, just I'm the best.
Yeah.
I'm the best. And the sun was coming up.
That seems like a triumphant moment.
Yeah.
She wasn't impressed?
No. I think that's when the fuse was
lit. At least she didn't write a big check. But yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I think over the whole course.
Do you mind if I use your...
No. We should hang out and have a drink sometime.
Absolutely.
See a comedy thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's do a Thursday night. Mugshots, Velve. That's my jam right there.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, mugshots always freaks me out.
How come?
I feel fucking old when I'm there, don't you?
Well, I'm older than you.
Well,
but after a few drinks, I don't care.
Those guys,
I feel
don't
old
go
to work.
There,
no matter. I mean, you have to decide if you want to be the old guy or the young guy.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm going to be. I don't know. I just like it, but I'm not there late. I mean, I go early, so. Most people go to the Velve and then mugshots. We like to go to mugshots first and the Velve and then be home in bed.
Yeah.
Early.
Yeah.
I like to start early and then end early.
I think that, have you always been like that, or you started getting like that as you? I do too. I wake up early naturally. No matter what time I go to sleep, I wake up at a ridiculous hour.
I get up now. I usually wake up like around 4:30,
mm-hmm.
and then it's like, oh, well.
Try and go back to sleep.
I'm not going to get out of bed till 5. But I may as well. Then I'm just awake. So I'm up super. But I used to be a late sleeper. It's just having my daughter now, and she likes to get up early. And I don't like the idea of her being awake alone. For many years, she would, when we had the baby monitor, she would call, Daddy, Daddy. Yeah. And then I would come in and get her, and then we would be together.
How old is she now?
She's 7 now. She's almost
8.
That
poem that she wrote is...
Isn't that amazing?
That's amazing.
It's frightening almost.
It is frightening.
It really shook me up. Gave me a heart attack. Maybe. But
I hope that someone like that always keeps their whatever that is that she has. I hope it always stays there. Because there's an innocence and niceness to it.
And just no one's holding her back.
Mm-mm.
And just but she's very shy at the same time. And I so identified with this.
How old did you say she was?
When she wrote that, she was six. She's
right,
seven and a half now.
Okay, seven and a half now. Yeah. You have to have a lot of One Direction stuff going on in your house.
No, she's pretty good. She gets things through the air somehow. I don't know. I have a playlist for her that we drive to school with that I've curated of she only wants to hear women singers. So it's, you know, Janis Joplin and Sheryl Crow and more contemporary things.
Cool.
But you know, I was like, at least I can control that because I drive her to school and takes 20 minutes every day. So she hears curated music by me. But she still gets, she knows Perry, what's her name? Katy Perry songs.
Yeah.
And I don't really know how she knows. She knows Taylor Swift. I guess it's just so ubiquitous you can't escape.
There's still a world of pop music out there.
Yeah.
Do you get into new music at all now? I mean, are you like on Spotify or anything like that?
I'm not super current. No, I'll put it that way. I'm trying to think what I got. You know, yeah, the thing. Well, Johnny Gowdy is my new discovery. But
yes.
I was like, what did I get into that I was so into lately? And it was by John Doe, of course, who's been around 40 years.
Yeah, a zillion years. It's funny because I was looking at the 40 albums of the year and the New Rolling Stone and stuff, and I was astonished at how many people are my age or older.
Really?
On that list. Yeah, like who? I mean, everyone from Foo Fighters, that's guys my age.
Yeah. Did you
Spoon,
see that?
Spoon, it's guys my age.
Yeah. You know those guys?
Yeah.
Yeah. I saw them at ACL.
They're amazing.
Yeah.
I'm kind of scared of Britt. I saw him at a club after I played. He was there. And then I went, I saw him and I leaned sideways and went like this. And he went, and then kept on talking to this person. So I was like, maybe he's in the thing.
Yeah.
Maybe he hates me.
You might be too much in your head at that point.
I always think people like that hate me. Do you?
Well, you can...
Ross Perot, you never had a thought that maybe he hated you when you just looked at him. You're like, this guy hates me.
No, yeah. I think that he just thought I was he was correct. I think he completely summed me up correctly as a drunken nobody who just wanted to talk to him and he didn't want any part of me.
How awesome is that, though?
I do like that story.
How were his ears funny. When you saw him?
Big.
Yeah.
Big, like taxi cab. Yeah.
I like that you wanted to thank him for getting Bill Clinton elected for.
Yeah, right. What do I say? Because I'm not a fan. I just, I mean, you've probably run across your heroes, or just people who were like super famous, and you just wanted to talk to them because they were famous. So even whether you like, I mean, if you saw Taylor Swift or someone you don't respect musically, you'd still want to have met them, right?
I have a Bon Jovi experience like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's hear it.
Well, I went up to John. And at a party, that was kind of for us in our honor, my band's honor. And the guy that had mixed our album was mixing It's My Life song for Bon Jovi.
Yeah.
And so he said, hey, I'll have this party. Bon Jovi's here. We're going to get all kinds of famous people. Lars Ulrich was the guy that owned my label and stuff. And so he'll get people. And so Sheryl Crow and the Alice in Chains guy. What's his name?
Trent?
No. Now we're really old. Jerry Cantrell and all kinds of people in Bon Jovi. And so I noticed that I talked to Richie, who's super cool, Richie Sambora.
Yeah.
And then Bon Jovi, you see Bon Jovi at a party, like, what are you going to walk up to Bon Jovi and be like, Bon Jovi?
Yeah,
you know
right?
what I mean?
I'm so glad to.
I'm glad you're here at my party. What do you think of me?
Yeah.
That was one thing I thought of saying. And then finally I'd had enough drinks and I'd been to the bathroom enough times with Andy Dick and Lars Ulrich to have the confidence to walk up to him. And I would notice he was leaving. He grabbed his jacket and he was telling whoever it was he was with, like, let's go. Maybe it was his wife or something. And I walked up to him and I went, hey, John, I'm Johnny. And he goes, yeah, I know. And he turned around.
No.
Yeah.
What an ass. Yeah, I know.
It ruined me.
Your intention was just to inform him of your name, not to have a gracious conversation.
My experience with Bon Jovi was just basically letting him know that I am Johnny.
Yeah.
And that was already, it had already been there.
Oh, that's disappointing because he seems like a nice, he's diminutive though, right?
Yeah, little guy, nice ass. Unbelievable. That was shocking to me and my band.
Just
Steve Jones from the Sex Pistols was there and he looked like your uncle.
Well,
at a rock party.
Of course.
Like he had a big gold Rolex.
What's he
on.
Supposed to look like? I mean, he's probably
sweater.
60 years old.
Yeah. I remember I think my band and I, we just, like this this dude told us, hey, come, I'll have this party for you. And we had been to dinner with this guy, so we weren't even thinking about it. And we smoked this joint on the way, and then the four of us walked into this party of, like, fucking, like, famous people. Yeah. And, like, we were like, Oh my God, look who the guy is over right there. And then Lars kept on coming up and being like, oh, you guys, you got to get around. You got to fucking talk to these people, man. You got to get in there. And then it'd be like, so what, you want me to go up and say to Sheryl Crow, hi, Sheryl Crow, yeah, I'm Johnny.
I know.
Yeah.
We, one time, I was really, I still love him, John Hyatt.
Mm-hmm.
Just brilliant, and I just was amazing. Not obsessed with him, but he was like my main
yeah
guy that I was into. This is in the 90s, and my friend was coming to town. This is in Dallas, and just listening to the local station, they're like, oh, coming up, John Hyatt's going to be in the studio. So we're like, let's find out where the studio is, and we'll just like ambush him, right? And I was like, this is a genius plan. So we were actually, it was pretty close to where we were, so we're like, we just waited, and then this van pulls up, and John Hyatt walks in, and like, we hadn't thought of like what to say. So we just like got out of the car like, John Hyatt. He's like, yeah, hey guys. And we're like, and then we had nothing to say. It was like, what are you going to play tonight? He's like, oh, I don't know. And he just went inside. Like, fuck. Like, you know, this is our moment. And we could have just, you know, been cool, but we weren't cool. It was sad. Did you see that movie, This Is 40?
Oh, yeah.
I didn't think it was a great movie, but Graham Parker in it, yeah, playing himself, because yeah, I worship Graham Parker. Just
I've got the gout. It was
great, yeah. And just seeing him, you know, portray probably exactly as he is now was kind of chilling, don't you think?
Yeah.
Just in the slippers and the bad.
Yeah, and just kind of like hat. They were being real honest about his career too.
And no one cares about him anymore. Yeah. But he was great.
Yeah.
He was really an influence, but somebody that I enjoyed.
Looked up to.
Yeah, for sure.
Do you listen to music when you write?
No, I like it to be quiet, actually. Okay. It's distracting, because I just feel like it's something that I enjoy to sit and listen, or, right, you know, I think it takes away. I can watch football and write, because, especially if it's something really boring.
Are you a football guy?
Stuff. Yeah, I like football.
Who's your team?
The Browns.
Oh, yeah, Cleveland.
Yeah, grow up. It's a sad.
You ever get back there? Your parents around?
My parents are there. We were back there a couple months ago. Not too much. I kind of left and didn't come back.
Oh, you did?
But I go back to be a good family member. But it's a sad town. And it's just, and you know, you associate it with that, with where you, like, your least, the version of yourself that you like least, that's right, where that kid lives.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah.
That's so, Miami for me.
So you just feel it. Just feel it. Do you get back to Miami?
Little as possible.
Yeah.
Yeah, seriously. I don't like going there. I think people should get this book. How do I tell people to get this book? You can go to the website. It's available at Book People if you're in Austin.
If you live
people that aren't in Austin, you can go to firethepretygirl.com.
Firethepretygirl.com, but also Amazon. I mean, Amazon is just the behemoth of selling books.
And it's also available for Kindle. Are you planning on an audiobook?
Would you like to read the audiobook?
No, you should read it. It's your story.
I like listening
to audiobooks read by the author.
Yeah. There's no plans like that currently. I mean, I'm a one-man operation. I mean, I put it out myself, and so it's all very new. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what happens? Do you try and sell this book to a bigger publisher, or does it behoove you more to hold on to it yourself? Because all they can do really is give you an advance and maybe get you some publicity.
I feel like I've got a thing that I did all by myself, and I believe in it, and I think that it's good, and nobody helped me, and I didn't take anybody's notes, and so it's mine. And so I'm sort of possessive of it, and so I'm sort of enjoying
the show.
Yeah, I'm sort of feeling like I own it, and if somebody wants to make me an offer, if someone finds out about it, the what I'm wrestling with is like I don't know how much money to spend to try to promote it. Like, I don't know enough about the return on that investment, right? So I don't know. It's pretty quiet right now.
And it's not like you're well known enough to do a crowdfunding thing.
Right.
Where you can not use your own money to get a
publisher. And I don't have to. I mean, I have enough money to, I mean, it's out. I made it. I mean, that was where all the investment is in. So now I don't know.
It's available on Kindle as well.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're into reading it on your Kindle or the Kindle app, it's available there too. So
I like a real book. I enjoyed reading a real book because I've been reading on my Kindle now for the last year. And it was nice reading a real book.
It's satisfying to hold in your hand.
But, yeah. I highlighted a lot. Stuff that I liked.
Like what? Read me something that you highlighted.
Okay. Let's just stop right here. Here's just a line. It's hard to overstate how emotional and how weird the earliest days of the post 9/11 era were. Because you still work for American Airlines or worked with American Airlines during the 9/11. I mean, you guys got to get this book. This guy was there for a lot of shit. All those plane crashes, that one that happened in the Bronx afterwards, that was so weird.
So many plane crashes. I don't mean to laugh about it, but I mean...
No, but I mean, you take it really seriously in here, and you can tell that it means a lot to you.
I liked
that you came up with the plan for the guy to not take any... to not take a salary until the end of 2002. But then when you got the thing back, it said from now until the end of the year.
Yeah.
I thought that was good.
Yeah. I think he's probably not happy with me about revealing that. But, you know, I think it would have saved him in the end if he'd done it.
Well, I also highlighted one of your jokes, the one that made me laugh the loudest out loud. I can remember it. It's the Muhammad Ali, Michael J. Fox one. That's a fucking great joke. I mean, it hurts. It's tough. But, man, it's good.
Well, you tell it.
Hold on, because I want to tell it right.
Tell it off the top of your head.
If I tell it off the top of my head, I'm going to sound like I'm going to mess up a thing, and then I'm going to sound like I used to be in this band where none of us could tell jokes. So we'd all tell jokes, it would be horrible.
I had lunch once with Martha Kelly. Do you know who she is? Very good comic, awesome person. And I was telling her, like, I don't like to be mean. I was just like, I don't, you know, this isn't that important to me, and I just don't want to be a mean comic. For instance, I have this joke that I never tell, and I told her that. She's like, she just like thought of, she's like, you have to tell that joke.
I mean, yeah, it's strong. It's just really, okay, here we go. Life isn't fair. But hey, life isn't fair. If you think life is fair, Michael J. Fox has Parkinson's disease. So does Muhammad Ali. Two icons with the same terrible disease. But we will never get to see them fight. But will we ever get to see them fight? Probably not. It's not fair. So if you buy this book, you'll have a copy of
that. I love
that
you're
joke.
Like you're not faking that laugh. It's terrible.
I had to put
it's
the book
terrible.
Down.
Like I didn't tell that joke. I was ashamed of that joke for a long time. And I wouldn't tell
you
it.
Should be. I could see people getting really mad, but that's where the beauty of that joke is just, it's out there.
That's not fair.
Those kind of jokes when somebody has a good heart and is a nice person, and once you're reading this book, you know who you are.
Right.
You get a sense of who you are.
You can't lead with that.
When the joke, if you would have led with that.
You have to set them up as a nice person.
Yeah.
And then hit them with that really horrible shit.
Look, we're about to go into the Christmas holidays. We've already talked about it. These people can go and get this book at firethepretygirl.com. I'm going to tell you a funny story about drinking a lot. My family drinks a lot.
Yeah.
We each bring a handle of vodka to our Christmas situation.
Love the handle.
And it's straight up shots. And then sometimes the chasers are just drinks. It's like a Russian family.
A drink
with Cuban.
A chaser of a drink. Yeah.
Terrible. And then one night, a couple of years ago, we ran out of cigarettes. And some of my cousins and me smoked at the time. And I was like, I'll go get them. And then people were like, no way. You drive. It's a block and a half from my grandma's house,
right,
to 7-Eleven. And I'm like, okay, cool. My aunt has MS. And so she was just chilling in a chair. And I said, hey, you got to go to the bathroom or anything? She's like, no. I'm like, can I use your rascal for a minute?
No.
I did. And I bought cigarettes for everyone in the family, even if they didn't smoke. I came back with like $50 worth of cigarettes for everyone.
Nice.
Let's smoke. Yeah. See, so
you got to make the best of it, whatever the situation is.
Take a rascal. Steal a rascal from your aunt.
Steal a rascal. That could be your memoir right there. Steal a rascal. I love pulling out just phrases that could be a title of something. Steal a rascal.
Do you ever play, you know what? I bet you'd like to play the songwriting game, but you could write like something just that wasn't a song. You could write your own thing to it where you get a title and you have those. There's songs on my records from that.
I think that might be a 2015. I think I would like to write some songs. I think I could write songs. I'm just saying.
Okay. You're welcome to come over here and record.
Don't joke about it.
Lucas has come over here and recorded before.
Yeah. The guy's multi-talented.
Multi.
Yeah.
Is there anything I'm missing? You got to go pick up your daughter. This has been great. I want to hang out.
No.
Definitely,
I mean,
after
I
the new year.
I just appreciate that most people who subscribe to your podcast, you know, are into it because they're into you and your music. And to let me, you know, try to get my way, worm my way into their consciousness, I appreciate that.
I can't. I'm being straight up. This is a great fucking book. I'm very excited about it. I said yes to have you on here because Lucas was his recommendation. I don't think he would send me some jackass dude.
Yeah.
But having read the book, I was so stoked. And I'm very excited to read The Elephant on Sixth Street.
Thanks, man.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for having me. But, you know, I'm just psyched that we're friends now.
Yeah, cool. Me too.
It's cool.
Me too.
It's more important than any of this shit.
I feel like I need to give you something so you can know me as well as I know you.
You gave me the awesome CD,
oh, yeah,
man.
The music. Payoso. Yeah, there you go.
El Payaso. Payaso. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
I said clown. It wrong. Yeah, it's a clown, right?
Yeah. Payaso.
Have you, do your listeners know the Whitney Houston story? Have they heard it a million times? Because I love that story.
Oh, they have. They have.
I love that. All right.
They have.
That's
I was actually, you know what? I was, the next day, I was driving to Ohio. I was a girl that I was going out with who did a lot of this art, lived here with me. Her brother died.
Oh, still when got she was her art. That's pretty funny.
Some of it, yeah.
Yeah.
What's that?
I don't know.
They're coming for us. No. So I'm in Dallas playing this show, and the next day I was driving to Youngstown, Ohio. It's going to take me 2 days, and then we were going to go we were going to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. She was a pretty cool girlfriend. I said, "What do you want to do for Valentine's Day?" And I said, "We can do anything you want." And I know you're in Youngstown, but I mean, is there anywhere we can go that's cool? And she goes, "Have you ever been to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?" And I said, "No." And she said, "That's what we should do." So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So anyway, we played. It was the Saturday night before the Grammy Awards.
Wow.
And Skyrocket went on stage in Dallas at some private function. And when we came off stage, I picked up my phone and I had like 60-something messages. Like, I think it was like 63 text messages. And I started looking at them and they all said, "It's all right, we love you, Whitney Houston. It's all right, we love you, Whitney Houston." And I was standing backstage and I was like, "Guys, I think something happened to Whitney Houston." And someone looked something up. I was like, "Oh, she died."
Oh, see, that's the thing that I didn't get about you telling that story. Because I'm like, that song is from like 2009 or 5 or something like that.
Yeah, so...
Oh, that's right. Yeah, because I didn't understand that when you wrote it to me in that email, I was just like, why did all the people? Why did everyone in the crowd have your phone number?
No. See, that's why I shouldn't write things to people. I should just talk to them.
No, but then that was going to be my follow up. Like, that must have been really kind of because I had to look it up the date, and then I was like, when did Whitney Houston die? Sorry, that was just
it was 2012.
Not putting the pieces together. Yeah.
Yeah.
So do you still do that song? I assume.
I don't really have a band of my own. Well, I have an all-girl band. That's a good band.
Yeah.
With me. But I don't know when we're going to play because they're members of the Blue Bonnets and they just put out a record and they're doing stuff right now.
Cool.
Those girls whose cards are on the wall. Hey, John, people should go to firethepretygirl.com. Is there a place where they can read the excerpt of the book? They can read it about on
Amazon. If you go to
Amazon,
you can read the whole first chapter, which is pretty funny.
Yeah, this is a great book. You're a great writer. You've had a tremendous luck in your life. And if I ever need a speech written,
thanks, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem.
All right. Merry Christmas, everybody.
Fantastic conversation with John Morton, man. What a great guy. Told you guys. Man, that's great. Go to firethepretygirl.com. Pick up these books. Fire the Pretty Girl, which is a fantastic book. I just started reading The Elephant on Sixth Street over my Christmas. It was kind of slow because I was reading another book at the same time. And actually a Sid Field screenplay book, which is interesting because The Elephant on Sixth Street is written as a screenplay. So that's interesting to read while I'm reading this Sid Field book. Okay, look, John Morton, thank you so much for coming by. Great guy. Very interesting. Incredible book. Read it. I loved it. 2014 is over, guys. This is closing it up. We're moving into 2015. Time to stick to the resolutions. Let's try and stick to our resolutions together. Tweet at me if you're like, "Hey, man, I'm thinking about skipping out on my resolution." I'll give you some backup. I'll be like, "Hey, man, no, stick to it. Stick to your guns." I'll do the same thing. Who's out there that's joining me? Follow me on Twitter. I'm at Johnny Gowdy. Like our Facebook page, How Did I Get Here? And man, I hope you guys all have a fantastic new year. Thank you so much for listening to the show, making it the best year yet, 2014. And the end of 2014 has just been fantastic. The last 4 months have been amazing. We have so many new listeners. And I just want to thank you all for taking the time to listen to this show, for being a part of it, and looking forward to 2015 and all the great interviews to come. All right? On Friday's show, you'll be hearing from Bang Feather Bang, from Esther Levon and her pal Chili, the Australian guitarist. All right? Let's get down, everyone. Happy 2015. Happy New Year. Oh, Jesus. Happy New Year.